Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our very first summer chapel, our summer online chapels this particular summer. And our speaker, you'll be glad to know, is Dr. Mark Yarborough. He currently serves as our president-elect, vice president for academic affairs, and professor of Bible exposition here at Dallas Theological Seminary, overseeing all seminary activities related to academics. On July 1st of 2020, he will begin his tenure as the sixth president of DTS. Along with his responsibilities at DTS, he serves as an elder of Centerpoint Church in Mesquite and travels extensively leading tours and speaking at conference centers. Mark has recently authored How to Read the Bible Like a Seminary Professor. He has been married for 28 years to Jennifer, his high school sweetheart. They have four children and reside in Forney, Texas.
Well, good morning. Good to be with you all today. I grew up in an absolutely wonderful little country church where my father was the weekend pastor, a bivocational pastor. And toddling around all of those wonderful hallways of that little country church, it's probably there that I was exposed first to the book of Jonah. Great little book. And I can vaguely remember hearing that in a Sunday school class with a bunch of other little kids. And whether this was actually taught or whether it's what I heard is irrelevant. But I think I kind of pieced together the story of Jonah something like this. God speaks to Jonah and says, "Jonah, go to Nineveh." And Jonah says, "Not going to do it. Not going to do it. I'm going to run away." And he goes down to Joppa and he gets on a boat and he runs away from God. And God says, "Jonah, I'm going to get you. Here comes a big storm." Big giant storm, and all of that transpires. And then eventually the sailors get mad and they throw Jonah overboard. And a big giant fish comes. That was the cool part of the story as a little kid. And swallows Jonah up. And inside the fish, because I vaguely remember probably seeing this on some kind of a felt board with pictures. And I remember seeing this picture of Jonah like sitting up like on a chair inside the belly of a big giant whale. And he's praying. And in essence, the story that I remember hearing about the prayer was that Jonah says, "God, I'm sorry. I'll never do this again." And God says, "Okay, fish, let him out." And the fish swims up to the shore and opens his mouth up. And Jonah just walks out. And then he picks up a Bible and he goes to Nineveh and he preaches a sermon, and the Ninevites trust in God, and it actually kind of shows Jonah rejoicing a little bit. And then I vaguely remember something about him pitching a tent outside of the city and God saying, "See, Jonah, what happens when you really follow me." End of story. Now, truth be known, what I just described is probably the story that many people think even today about this book of Jonah. It's four chapters. It is loaded. And the interesting thing is that all of the wonderful teachings that are contained within this book, it really does come down to the end of the book in regard to a particular question that God asks his prophet. And I believe that actually if you miss that at the end of the book, in all likelihood, we've missed the storyline of the book, and we have missed the purpose, the message of the book. And because of some recent studies and things that I've been working on personally, I have revisited this particular book again, and I was chased all over again by this haunting question that God gives his prophet. And so I want to remind us of chapters 1, 2, and 3, and then look for just a couple of minutes at chapter 4, and I want to zero in on how this book ends. Because in this moment in time, in the COVID-19 era, that question has been after me all over again as if for the very first time. So you do know the storyline. If you have your Bibles, I invite you to kind of follow along. Jonah chapter 1, it is the word of the Lord that comes and is presented to Jonah. God speaks and God gives instructions. And even as a little kid, the first part of the story is so very true, the part that I remember. God says, get up, arise, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because the wickedness has come up before me. And much to our shock, much to our surprise, Jonah the prophet runs away from God. Again, I vaguely remember the words of my Sunday school teacher, probably at the age of five, saying, everybody knows you can't run away from God. God knows all. He sees all. But much to our shock, unlike other prophets, this prophet runs away from God. And sure enough, he goes down to Joppa, and he finds a ship that's bound for Tarshish, and he runs away from God. And sure enough, the Lord sends a great wind and a great storm. And God is after his prophet. And there are a variety of things that take place because there are Gentile sailors that are on this boat, and they begin to have this discussion with Jonah, and they cast lots, and it points to him. And eventually Jonah speaks in chapter 1, verse 9, and he answered after they ask him who he is. He says, I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land. And that's our first moment in the book where we're going, something is awry here, because this prophet of God, who knows that he can't run from God but is yet doing so, says that he worships or fears the Lord, and yet he is running from the same God who made the sea and the dry land, who is now causing a storm to try to get his prophet's attention. And even the Gentile sailors know that something is greatly amiss. There's a heart issue that's going on with the prophet. I want to keep coming back to that. And so, much to our surprise, they actually try to save his life. And the text says that instead, notice that word that's used there, NIV is what I'm reading from currently, verse 13, instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. And the interesting thing is that then these Gentile sailors, they actually cry out to the God of Israel. And they beg that the God of Israel would not hold them accountable for taking this man's life. And eventually they throw him overboard, the sea grows calm, and we kind of think the story's over. But you know what happens at the end of verse 17? It says, but the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. In chapter 2, in its entirety, we find out that Jonah packages together a bunch of psalms that he knew. None of these are Jonah's words. All of them come out of various psalms. And he puts together a particular psalm, his own psalm. And it's an absolutely beautiful picture. But pardon the pun here. Something's really fishy about this particular psalm. Because while it sounds really good, it misses the very one thing that we should be expecting. And that is his asking for forgiveness, his confession of sin. Jonah never does that. Oh, he's thankful to be alive, but he never confesses his sin. So here's what happens at the end of this. Chapter 2, verse 10, it says, and the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto the dry land. I promise you, the original readers and hearers of this, when they heard that word, their mind went back to the book of Leviticus, where God had used that particular word specifically to say that when his people were unfaithful in the land that he would give them, he would vomit them out of the land. I think when they heard this word, they realized that this may very well be a commentary by God on Jonah's unfaithful heart. And so there's a bit of a redo. The words are used again in chapter 3. It says, then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message that I give you. And it says, Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and he went to Nineveh. He goes and he speaks this real short sermon, and much to our surprise, the people hear it and they believe him. And it goes through a series of events where the people believe, and the king of Nineveh hears about this, and he leads the people in a process of repentance and ashes and sackcloth and those kinds of things. And he makes a proclamation. And at the end of it, chapter 3, verse 10 says this, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he had compassion and did not bring upon them the destruction that he had threatened. Now, here's the amazing thing. Most people, when it gets to chapter 4, is where the ambiguity arises. When I was a little kid and I sat there in class, I think it was then kind of wrapped up. And so we really need to do what God says. And we need to obey the Lord and rejoice when people come to faith. chapter 4 is a very sad climax to this narrative. And it wraps up quickly because Jonah hears about it, and to be perfectly honest, friends, he is ticked off. He is angry. And what becomes exposed is that he hates those Ninevites. And his priorities in life, there's a series of things that unfold in chapter 4. You know, I mean, he has this engagement with a plant and a worm and the wind, and the Lord provides all these things trying to get Jonah's attention. But what's amazing to me is when it comes to the very end of this book, God keeps asking these questions to him. And he says, but God said to Jonah, this is verse 9, do you have a right to be angry about the vine? He's actually asked this question after question in front of him saying, Jonah, do you have any right to be angry? And here's the reality, friends, by the time it gets to the end of this book, and this is what's been chasing me, by the time it gets to the end of this book, we realize that Jonah has an inverted scale of value. He is more concerned, look at this, about shelter and plants than he is even about animals. And last but certainly not least, in fact, the most priority is the issue of his concern about people. About people. People that do not know about the grace of God that is extended to them. That's in many ways what this story is about. And God is wanting not just Jonah, but even his own people back in the home country to realize that they too have access to the grace of God, but they have been thwarting it. And here we see the Ninevites, if I can phrase it this way, the enemy of God's people, at least in this context, they saw what even God's own people couldn't see. How much they need his grace. And Jonah was more concerned, listen to this, about the stuff of earth than he was about the people that needed to hear about the grace of God. Here's what's interesting in this moment of time, friends. It has been chasing me, I know it has been you, that God is more concerned about people. People that need to know the good news of grace that is extended through the sacrifice of the very Son of God. In my own life, I have been wrestling with that. I know you have been too, about what do I need to let go of? What do I need to not have as a priority so that I can have opportunity to share the good news of God's grace and God's love through the cross to people that I might not normally have an opportunity, or maybe people that have been there all along, like neighbors and families and friends and individuals that I come into contact with, even in this COVID-19 era. I read this years ago. I want you to listen to this, and then I'll wrap up. It came out of a book by Dobson, a book entitled Coming Home, Timeless Wisdom for Families. It says, when my daughter Danae was a teenager, she came home one day and said, hey, Dad, there's a great new game out. I think you'll like it. It's called Monopoly. I just smiled. We gathered the family together and set up the board, and it didn't take the kids long to find out that old Dad had played this game before. I soon owned all the best properties, including Boardwalk and Park Place. I even had the Baltic and the Mediterranean. My kids were squirming, and I was loving every minute of it. About midnight, I foreclosed on the last property and did a little victory dance. My family wasn't impressed. They went to bed and they made me put the game away. As I began putting all of my money back in the box, a very empty feeling came over me. Everything that I had accumulated was gone. The excitement over riches was just an illusion. And then it occurred to me, hey, this isn't just the game of Monopoly that has caught my attention. This is the game of life. You sweat and strain to get ahead, but then one day, after a little chest pain or a wrong change of lanes on the freeway, the game ends. It all goes back in the box. You leave this world just as naked as the day you came into it. I once saw a bumper sticker that proclaimed, "He who dies with the most toys wins." That is so wrong. It should say, "He who dies with the most toys dies anyway." You see, friends, I've been reminded all over again, and I bet you have been too. God is concerned about people. People that need to hear about his grace. May we remember that in these days of social distancing and in these days where we might have an opportunity to be in contact with those that we might not normally have an opportunity to do so, and to be not just beneficiaries of, but stewards of that good news to live that out and to extend that to others. Because that, my friends, is the heart of God. That is what He is concerned about. Let's let go of the stuff of earth so that we can have the priority of heaven.